Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Ross Barkin. And Ross is a writer and journalist, and he's a Village Voice contributor. And he's here to discuss his article, Albany Will Stay Broken, and the Growing Independent Conference is a Reason Why. Hi, Ross. I've been doing Focus on Albany for over 4 years now. So I remember when the IDC first started, and it was like shocking when it first happened. So can you give your overall knowledge of, you know, why the IDC happened and what the origins of it?
Sure. So thank you for having me on. And
thank you.
The IDC was formed in 2011 by Jeff Klein, state senator from the Bronx. And it was originally a conference of four Democrats, one other one from the city, Diane Savino, and then David Carlucci and David Valesky from north of New York City. And the rationale was, from the IDC's point of view, that the Democratic conference was too dysfunctional, and that after their brief two-year period in the majority, which lasted in 2009 and 2010, there was too much chaos, which was the case, and that they wanted to strike out on their own to try to fix the state legislature. And that's the line the IDC will give. And I think there's a little merit in that. But I also think that there are a lot of other factors at play. And I think one was that, you know, Jeff Klein wanted to be at some point the majority leader of the state Senate. He's a very ambitious person. And that wasn't going to happen as long as he remained with the mainline Democrat. They were not going to elevate him to the top post. You know, there were personal differences between him and the leadership of the mainline Senate Democrats. And so Klein saw an opportunity in forming this third conference. It kind of gave him clout that he wouldn't have otherwise. And then it also, you know, allowed these other three senators who were with him to have more of a say in what was going on in the state legislature. But what really the turning point for the IDC was in 2013. So in 2012, there was a presidential election, and a lot of Democrats did well down the ballot. And there were enough Democrats in the state Senate, registered Democrats, to form a majority in the Senate, which, as your listeners might know, is very rare, despite New York being a deep blue state. We've rarely had a state Senate Democratic majority. You can go back 50 years, and there was really only that two-year period I mentioned before. So in 2013, the Democrats figured, well, we have a majority, this IDC conference, they'll come back to us and we'll form a Democratic majority and we'll pass some, you know, progressive legislation. And that did not happen. Instead, the IDC said, well, we're going to ally with the state Senate Republican conference and we're going to form a majority that way. And Jeff Klein became a co-leader in that scheme, a co-majority leader. This is something that hadn't happened before that I know of, and it was then majority leader Dean Skelos of the Republicans and Jeff Klein together running the state Senate. So the benefits for the IDC were very clear immediately. They all had committee chairmanships, which they wouldn't have had in the minority. They had bigger staff budgets. You know, they could pay their staffers more, hire more people, do more reports, and they had much more clout. And so during budget season, which is really what matters most to the functioning of the state, Andrew Cuomo, the governor, meets with the Speaker of the Assembly and the Senate Majority Leader to hash out this gigantic budget. So now it wasn't just Andrew Cuomo, the Assembly Speaker, and the Majority Leader, Dean Skelos. It was all of them plus Jeff Klein, and Klein, with his conference of then four, was able to get into the negotiation room and really, you know, have a say in what happened in New York State. So for him, this was a coup. It was a great achievement. And of course, I would argue that for progressives and for people on the left, it really is not a good thing, because while the IDC has progressive accomplishments, that they've helped pass a minimum wage hike, a paid family leave program, had they allied themselves with the Democrats and formed a single conference and really worked together, they could have had a majority in that period I just talked about, 2013, and even today, where the numbers in the state senate are a bit fuzzy now, and it's not clear if they got back together that the Democrats would actually have a majority. United, they'd be much stronger, and they'd be able to pass more progressive legislation and not empower Republicans. And that's really what the IDC is doing at the end of the day. It's giving state Senate Republicans, who really should not be in the majority in this state, a lifeline. And as long as the IDC exists, they'll have that lifeline. And now the IDC has 8 members, not 4. So they're stronger than ever. And I think they're going to be a fixture of our state for a long time.
Now, you had said that that Jeff Klein was not a favorite of the leadership. When you say leadership, are you saying Janaris?
Yes. He and Mike Janaris, both very ambitious, smart men from New York City. Klein was in charge of the fundraising for the state Senate Democrats before he formed the IDC. And there was a lot of questions over how well he was doing his job. There was a feeling, I know from the mainline Democrats, that Jeff was also part of the dysfunction too. So there's a lot of bad blood between Jeff and Mike Janaris. And, you know, even today you talk to the IDC and they see Janaris as, you know, an incompetent person and sort of this failed leader. And I think Janaris would say, well, you know, the IDC is craven and Jeff is power hungry. And so, I think the Senate Democratic leadership could be better. I mean, they have watched as members of their conference defected to the IDC. So you could argue that's a reflection on them, but really I do think it is more about Jeff and his ambition and his ego and the ways he's willing to empower himself and his allies at the expense of liberal Democrats in New York State, and certainly in New York City in particular.
Now, when the IDC was first formed, I can understand why Diane Savino joined the IDC, because she's aligned with Jeff Klein. But for somebody like David Valesky and David Carlucci, what did Jeff Klein offer those two men that made them jump ship? Because a lot of people were angry with Carlucci after so much effort was spent on getting him elected, he jumped over to the IDC. What did Jeff Klein promise them to make it look rosier on his side of the street?
Well, like I said, Jeff likely foresaw that there'd be an opportunity like 2013 where either conference, the Democratic conference or the Republican conference, would need the IDC to form a majority. So if Carlucci's pretty young, in particular, and you tell a young politician, look, you join us, you're in the majority no matter what happens. And so what does it mean to be in the majority? That means a committee chair. That means if you have a bill, it's going to get a hearing. It may become law. You get money if you chair a committee that's more salary for you. You get a stipend for that. You get to hire more staffers. I mean, the perks of being in the majority in the state Senate, I would say, are maybe even more appealing than in the U.S. Senate, because in the United States Senate, being in the minority isn't doesn't mean a total lack of power. You know, you have the filibuster. There are ways, if you're a United States senator in a narrowly divided chamber in the minority, where you can still have a say. You can still affect the outcome of legislation and really be relevant. But in the state Senate, and I'm not an expert on this, but from what I understand, the way the rules are drawn, being in the minority, even if you are just, you know, one or two members shy of majority, means you really are utterly devoid of power. And so I think if you're a elected official, and we're seeing this now as more Democrats defect the IDC, there's that allure of being in the majority and being in power and having Jeff tell you, look, no matter what happens, you'll be part of a majority. And so, as I'll talk about too, there's risk as well. There's less risk for Carlucci and Valesky, because from what I understand, they're not from particularly liberal districts. You know, they're not overwhelmingly Democratic or overwhelmingly left of center. The risks, though, are for the newest members of the IDC. So we just had Jose Peralta in Queens, Marisol right. Alcantara in Upper Manhattan, and Jesse right. Hamilton in Brooklyn, three mainline Democrats who jumped to the IDC. They're all from very liberal districts, you know, almost overwhelmingly completely Democratic, you know, no threat of a Republican challenger, not even really a lot of moderate Democrats. And so they're going to have to be looking over their shoulders in 2018, because I do think primary challenges are coming. I don't know if these primary challengers will win, but I do think they're coming.
So it seems like there's more minority members, meaning Hispanic and Black, joining the IDC, where at the beginning it wasn't. Do you think that that Jeff Klein is going to try to encourage more Hispanic and Black members of the Senate to join his group?
Yes, I do. It's great, as they say in politics, optics for the IDC. The IDC was before this session a five-member, all-white conference, four of them men, and they all represented districts that maybe weren't particularly liberal. And so the argument against the IDC, which I still make, is that if you're forming an alliance with Senate Republicans, by definition, you are forming an alliance with people who are hostile to the interests of poor Black and brown people in New York City. And so I'm not saying people in the suburbs and upstate don't deserve representation. They do. I'm just saying the Senate Republican Conference, which is primarily not based in New York City, they're based in Long Island, and then they're based north of the city in rural areas. They don't really understand the struggles or needs of the urban working class and poor. They just don't. It's not their priority. They aren't in their districts, and so they're not going to support that kind of legislation. But now that Jeff has an eight-member conference and three of the newest members are Black and Hispanic, he can say, well, see, the IDC, we deliver for everyone. You can't say we're not a conference of the working poor, you know, in New York City, because now we have a guy from central Brooklyn and we have a woman from uptown, you know, heavily Hispanic Manhattan. And we have another Hispanic lawmaker from Queens. And you know, to Jeff's credit, you know, he in the IDC certainly delivered for his district, and I'm sure these new senators may be able to bring some more funding to their districts than they would have before, and so I won't discount that. But big picture talk, as long as the Senate Republicans are in power, the main priorities of the middle class to working poor in New York City will not be met. And so, you know, rent regulations are extremely important, you know, keeping housing affordable, things like that. The Senate Republican Conference is not really interested or, focusing on that realm.
Let's go back to the birth of the IDC or the pre-birth of the IDC. Jeff Klein approached Cuomo with this idea, and Cuomo had an aha moment and said, that's good, you know, this way I'll be able to, you know, keep a Senate that's not too liberal.
So from what I understand, I was not covering Albany politics at the time. This is all from my own reading and secondhand sourcing, is that, well, while this was certainly Jeff Klein's idea and he is the mastermind, Governor Cuomo has encouraged and nurtured it all the way. And he's offered tactical advice. He's in no way criticized the IDC. Publicly, he said, I don't meddle with the state legislature, which we know is not true. And
right. So
for Andrew Cuomo, having this divided legislature serves his aims, because he, while he's been doing a lot more progressive things in the past few years, maybe he looks toward a presidential run, which I personally don't think is that viable, but people will disagree with me. He's not a very liberal person. On social issues, he is. On fiscal policy, he's actually governed more, I'd argue, like a moderate Republican. And so having the IDC here keeps the Democrats divided. It keeps the state Senate from forcing through more liberal legislation that maybe he'd feel uncomfortable signing into law. And it also gives him additional clout, because as long as there are factions in the state Senate fighting with each other, as long as they're infighting, they can't unite against him. And so this year, I'd argue Cuomo probably have the toughest time with the state legislature than he ever has, because the assembly appears fed up with him. And even Senate Republicans are angry too, mostly having to do it with his meddling with a commission that was supposed to give state lawmakers a pay raise. And so there's a lot of ill will about that and the way he's been treating the legislature. So I do think Cuomo is going to have a harder time with state lawmakers than he has in the past. But at the same time, as long as Mike Gianaris and Jeff Klein are fighting with each other, and as long as the Democrats remain divided into two conferences, one of which continues to grow at the expense of the other, Andrew Cuomo has increased clout.
Now, you say Gianaris and Klein fighting with each other. That's a good phrase. Where do you see Andrea's Cousins fitting into all this? Because if I was Andrea Stewart Cousins, I would be fighting back tooth and nail trying to give credence to my conference and to grow my conference. It doesn't seem like she's doing that.
Well, so she's been more outspoken this year about calling on the governor to unite the two conferences and get the one Democrat who caucuses the Republican, Simca Felder, to come back. So she's been talking a bit more and being more outspoken and critical. But at the same time, I think the Senate Democrats under Stuart Cousins, and even before then, have always not been as aggressive as they could be. And I do think the criticisms of the Senate Democratic Conference are somewhat valid, that the leadership there from Stuart Cousins, even from Gianaris, is maybe not what it could be, that they're often content to sit back and wait, whether it was in 2016, hoping Hillary Clinton would provide enough of a wave down the ballot to elect their candidates, and maybe not doing more to prepare for the possibility that Hillary Clinton was not Barack Obama and wouldn't have the same down ballot momentum. So there is a lack of long-term strategic thinking from the Senate Democrats. I think there's a lack of aggression. Now that members are defecting, they're probably discovering that they need to be far feistier and maybe more critical of both the IDC, Governor Cuomo. At the same time, they don't really have a lot of leverage here. There's not much they could offer a Jesse Hamilton or a Jose Peralta, two Democrats who just defected. There's not much they can offer them. They can't say, stay with us because you'll be definitely in the majority and we'll give you, you know, a great committee, or we'll give you XYZ. They don't have much to give. The IDC has a lot more carrots, and they may even have a stick or two, and the mainline Democrats are empty-handed.
And the same is true for Tony Avella.
So Tony Avella, you know, he has no reason to go back to the Senate Democrats. I think he's a guy, having covered him and know him a bit. He was always estranged from the Queens Democratic establishment in his borough. He's always known as an outsider and a maverick and someone who didn't really get along with people. And while the Senate Democrats really invested a lot of resources in his election to the Senate, where he dethroned a Republican who'd been there for 38 years, he really didn't feel like he owed them much. And he also represents a district that's not particularly liberal. If you look at Tony Avella's district, there are parts of it that certainly voted for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. And there are a lot of Democrats there who maybe are not particularly left on the spectrum. So while he did get a primary challenger in 2014, he did, and he almost lost. I think he's probably safe for the foreseeable future. And being part of the IDC is better for his brand as a outsider maverick than it is for maybe the new Democrats who joined.
What I find interesting about Senator Avella is he has always been vehemently anti-fracking, anti-waste from Pennsylvania coming into New York State to pollute New York State, and you know, the Senate Republicans have more or less quashed all that legislation, and I find it interesting that Tony Avella, who is so anti-fracking, joins a group that is kind of like, okay, well, this is going on, so what's the big deal? I find that really interesting.
Well, you're right to feel that way, and that's the central hypocrisy of the IDC. Jeff Klein's pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, you know, avowed progressive who's aligning himself with a conference that, for the most part, has fought against legalizing gay marriage, that is fairly pro-life, that has thwarted, liberal priorities repeatedly. And so fracking's another good example, and Cuomo put that to bed when he announced shortly after he's reelected that there wouldn't be fracking in New York State. You know, that was definitely a victory for the Avellas of the world. But at the same time, as long as you're working with the Senate Republicans, and I shouldn't say working, as long as you're empowering the Senate Republicans, and that's the difference. You know, the IDC will say, well, this is a bipartisan effort. What's wrong with collaborating with the other side? There's nothing wrong with it. There's a difference between collaborating and working maybe toward a common goal and really giving credence and power to a conference that, given the voter registration in the state and given what most people in the state want, it's a conference that really goes against the reality on the ground. And so this is the central contradiction of the IDC, but it's one that won't be resolved until you either defeat enough of their members to weaken the conference, or you have a different governor who makes it a priority to have a united Democratic conference. And I think as long as Andrew Cuomo is governor, you will have a IDC that is quite powerful.
In the article that you wrote for the Village Voice, you had mentioned that the state of Washington has kind of the same, the government in the state of Washington has the same kind of power sharing that New York has. And you kind of alluded to the fact that there was a possibility with so many states where the Democrats have a razor-thin majority that somebody like the Koch brothers, who are wealthy enough to swing elections in the state, therefore creating this coalition government in a number of states. And why I feel that's important is while people are marching in the streets against Trump, you know, maybe a lot of people don't realize that it's because the state legislature draws the lines for Congress. And if people are going to ignore what's going on in the state legislature, then maybe we're going to have a Republican majority in the Congress for a long time. So do you think that that concept that is in Washington and it's here, do you think that concept might spread and what the ramifications would be?
So I agree with much of what you said. I don't know how many states there are beyond Washington and New York where this sort of scenario could exist, where Democrats are barely hanging on, because there's so many states, I would say, that just have outright Republican majorities. I mean, Republicans control so many state legislatures now. But I will say, if you're a billionaire like a Koch or a Mercer, and you're looking at ways to ensure Republicans stay in power, even as demographics and state change, even as district lines maybe in the next redistricting period change, you may look and say, hey, there's a blueprint in New York. Hey, there's a blueprint in Washington State. We can keep our boys in power even though the currents are against us. And so that's what I'm concerned about. I don't know if in 2 years you're going to see 10 IDCs in 10 different states. What I think could happen is it really puts a thought in the head of someone with a lot of money and power to shape local government. And as we know, local government really determines how people live their lives as much or more than the federal government. And most policy, whether it's the minimum wage you're paid or, you know, the laws that govern, you know, the tenant-landlord relationship or the speed limit or education funding, you name it, these are all things set by the state legislature. And if there is a way to keep Republicans in power, even if a state has a Democratic wave or is moving in a left-wing direction, you may see wealthy, powerful people seize on that and use that blueprint. And who knows? Who knows what will happen? So I don't know if anything's imminent. I do know two states have this power sharing agreement, at least that I know of. And you could always see more. I mean, anything is possible these days.
Thank you. Thank you, Ross. Tell our listening audience a little bit about who you work for and what kind of work you've done.
Sure. So I am a freelance journalist based in New York City. I'm from New York City. I write frequently for the Village Voice. I'm a contributor there. I also write for The Guardian, New York Daily News, Esquire, the Times occasionally, Columbia Journalism Review, various places. So I contribute to a lot of different outlets, and I write a lot on both New York and national politics. That's been my specialty. I used to work at the New York Observer, which was owned by Donald Trump's son-in-law, and I covered New York and then national politics there, and I traveled a bit for the 2016 campaign and covered Trump as well as the other candidates. And now I'm still writing on politics, and I have a passion for that. And I think it's a very important focus on the local things because they often get overlooked.
Ross, thank you so much. I would like this conversation to be continued as this session evolves. So you've
yes,
been listening
definitely.
To. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank
been
you for having
to,
me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Ross Barkin. And if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a great weekend.